Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man whose finger is at this very moment travelling in time. It's Richard Herring! Thank you, fans. I am good. Hooray! Welcome. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rehelestapur. There are lots of cool kids in today. They've managed to weather their way. There's been a storm today for people watching this in the future or listening in the future. Terrible storm, but we've managed to. Most of us have managed to get here. So it's good to thank you for coming along and getting through the terrible transport problems. What's happened to me this week? I've been to Vienna this week. I took my wife away on a little, what was her birthday, little romantic sojourn to Vienna in Austria. It's pretty, should have married me, shouldn't you? I think you've got, now you're regretting it. You had your chance as well. I was disappointed though. I only really went to Vienna because I wanted to see the factory where they make the Viennetta, and I don't have that sort of stupid Ferris wheel. Old cathedral. It's a load of shit, really. My wife also tried to get at me this week. We had a Halloween party this week. It was Halloween the week we did this. She had a cheese board for the guests. That's how sophisticated we are. And she bought some cheddar cheese, but it was Wookiee Hole cheddar cheese, which that is a contradiction in terms. That is not... Only cheddar can make cheddar caves are the best. Any fans of Wookiee Hole in? I'm going to make this a question for today. So it's a way of... making you know what Wookiee Hole was. I think most of you don't. It's a rival Somerset-based place. And I had a sex dream the other day. It was very exciting. As a married man, I've been married for 18 months now. It's going pretty well. I always thought I'd get married one day. I never dreamt I'd be married for 18 months. I might give it another 18 months, see how that goes. But I had a sex dream, not about my wife. And it was a voluptuous, semi-clad woman, and she came up, she was making it very clear she wanted to have sex with me, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't have sex with you, I am married. And she was very insistent, and then I said, no, sorry, I've showed her my wedding ring, which, you know, it's quite cool of me in some ways, but in a lot of ways it's really fucking annoying, because that is the one place that I am allowed to have sex. is in the dreamscape on that plane, and I turn down. Awful, I'm embarrassed for myself. What other things that have been going on in the world? Russell Brand is trying to overthrow the state. which is good. He's a previous guest, Russell Brand, trying to form. He hasn't really got any ideas of what will come next, but what's good? The rich people are really going to suffer in his new scheme. I don't think he's really thought it through all the way. But do vote. Don't listen to him about the not voting. Even if you're going to change the system, do make sure you vote. It's important, or the British National Party will get in and it'll be your fault. They will be. So that is all I'm going to say about that. So I think I've warmed you up in both that and my... I'm going to show the audience at home some of the... There's a couple of new guys at the front here, aren't usually here. What's your name?
Michael.
Michael, you've got the kind of terrifying black eyes of Eugene Toombs from The X-Files. Which... And the demeanour of that. It's quite a good. That was quite a good reference. Did you get that a lot? what do you do for a living, Michael, when you're not crawling through ducks and stuff?
IT.
IT, yeah. That's good. It's a good cover. It's a good cover. And what's your name?
David.
Are you in IT, David?
Yeah,
let's cut to the chase. they're all in IT. What's the best thing about IT, David?
Computers.
Yeah.
Computers, says, yeah, that is... That is good. And there is a little tiny... I've had been plagued by flies the whole time we've been doing these podcasts, and there's a little tiny midge back here again. So I am ready. I've got an executioner thing. I've electrocuted one person with this, and it was much worse than you imagine it would be. So I'm ready to get that midge this time. Look, we're going to, without further messing around and spoiling your day, because I know why you've come here, will you please welcome my guest in this podcast? He is best known. I think you'll all be here to see him from his appearance... in 6 pairs of pants. Are we sick of talking about that? I'm going to ask him a bit about that. Will you please welcome Simon Pegg, ladies and gentlemen, from 6 pairs of pants. Simon Pegg. Come in, sit down. Have a microphone. Simon Pegg, he's off of films. Off of proper film. Not like the usual shit we get.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Simon?
I'm really well.
Good.
I'm so glad you mentioned Eugene Victor Toombs.
Yes, I thought you would like it.
I got that.
Good. It's him.
Oh, God, he is. He's going to eat my liver.
I'm glad that reference worked. They didn't like the Cracker Jack thing in the warm-up. Fucking hell, I mean, you were primed. So what do you remember about... Oh, we'll get out of the way. What do you remember about 6 pairs of pants? Can you name... The six pairs of pants.
Yeah, it was myself. Yeah. It was Jessica Stevenson, Hines. Yeah. That's where I met her, and that's where that relationship began. Neil Malarkey, yeah. Simon Schatzberger, good. Katie Carmichael.
He was the hard one to get. If this was pointless, I think pretty much all of it would be pointless.
Simon Schatzberger, you might not know the name.
You would definitely know.
But if I said to you, it's just possible you could save my life. You might remember that Yellow Pages commercial when he woke up and someone had drawn something on a painting.
Yeah.
It was him. Sally Phillips.
Correct. And no, one more.
No, yeah, there was.
That's only 5 pairs of pants.
Oh, it was... I got the girls. It's, no, yeah, and me.
No, you're in it. I don't think you've said one of the girls. She's in space.
Sally Jess. It's Katie Carmichael.
Yes. Whew, that would have been embarrassing. So, do you remember any memories of recording? I watched one of them. They're on three of them on YouTube.
It was a sketch show that we made for Meridian TV. And it was like, so it was on everywhere but London. In fact, it was on like in the southeast, but not London.
Right.
And it was kind of a sketch show with some sketches. And it was intermittently funny, most sketch shows are. But it was a slightly more intermittently funny than most sketch shows are.
Well, I find it quite... Because the two of your... I had Edgar Wright on, and we talked about Asylum as well.
Yes.
Which is another early sketch show with... Which, again, it felt a bit like someone had gone, there's 6 funny people, let's put them all together and see if that makes a show.
Well, that was a weird one. We got all these comics together in a room back in the day. This is 96, maybe. And there was a whole bunch of us, and we started riffing around the idea of a comedy show set in a psychiatric hospital. And... 3, I don't know, I won't name them, but they are known now, comics. They left because they didn't agree with it, because they thought it was bad taste. And I said, I know a girl who could be in it. Her name's Jess. And that's how Jess got into Asylum, and that's how Spaced happened. So it was very much thanks to certain comics' moral standpoints that show got made. Thank you very much. him.
Yeah, it's good. But it's sort of weird. It's weird seeing those. I mean, it's sort of weird seeing those early things. And Simon, the other Simon, is a very funny guy. And you kind of just. It's sort of weird the way different. I mean, you know, I could say this person the amount of Fist of Fun. It's weird the way some people's careers take off. And they become superstars, and some people don't. It's sort of, it's kind of quite random.
We had a very interesting talking about Fist of Fun in 1998. I supported Steve Coogan on tour, and we had this little thing every Friday night when we'd finished wherever we were playing in the country, you know, up and down the country. We'd all go back to that whatever hotel we were staying in, and we'd watch Fist of Fun, and it became like the gags from the show became like our sort of tour bus shtick. Including Paul Putner's Curious Orange.
If you want a free copy of it, I think that was probably.
That's what I was.
That was this morning, Richard, not right. Judy. But that's might be coming at some point. I met you in Hull on that tour.
And I would have told you about that because we were all full of it and a bit sort of starstruck by it.
Well, I know. I remember seeing. I'd been really drinking heavily the night before. I think I had literally just been sick in the car park of our hotel.
Nice.
And then you bounded up very excited. And
hello.
And yes, your costume lady wanted to try on the Curious Orange's head.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. And we put it on. That's right.
That's what I remember. Oh, about that. And what was it like touring with Steve Coogan? What stories can you tell us about that from behind the scenes?
None.
It was a lot of fun. It was like being in a band for a year, and. None. it was a lot of we did 102 dates across the country, and then we went into the West End for 3 months and did the Lyceum, you know, so it ended up being like 100 and God knows what shows, but it was enormous fun. And then in the summer of that year, me and Julia Davis, who was also supporting Steve, we made Big Train that summer. So we stopped the tour, made Big Train, and then went into the West End. So it was a great year. It was a really fun year. You know, it was all at the beginning of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to ask an emergency question straight away.
Do it.
I'm going to ask you the new one.
If I'd have told you a story from the Coogan tour, you wouldn't need an emergency question.
I wouldn't
question,
need an emergency question. I was hoping for, you know, a bit of. So I imagine you got colds. That's what I'm saying. But, would you rather have a tit? I don't know why I'm reading off a piece of paper. I know this, but I'm going to pretend. Would you rather have a tit that dispensed talcum powder? So it would be like a woman's breast on your body, just one.
Yeah.
But every time you touched it, unlimited. Well, not there'll be an unlimited supply. Some talcum powder would come out.
Poof. Right.
Or instead of that, you can't have both.
I have to have one.
Well, you have to have one of them. Or a finger that could travel through time. So you can... Only your finger can travel through time. But you can direct where it's going and you can still operate it. But...
Well, obviously the latter.
Yeah.
Because then I could reach forward to a time when everybody had a talc tip and dispense at my leisure.
I'm not sure that... I don't think the talc would come back.
Oh, it's going to happen.
You might have a bit of talc on the end of your finger.
Just come back with the talky finger.
But if you've got the wrong... If you got the wrong tit, then you'd be arrested. You'd be arrested for sexual harassment.
Oh yeah, because you're not allowed to touch the non-talc tit, are you? In this incredible future we're developing here,
it'd be quite good. I was sort of thinking about this because this is quite a new emergency question, but presumably, you know, if sort of some kind of wormhole that has opened up in time,
it would have to be that big for the finger.
But then, you know, there are other things like that that could that sort of dimensions. It's interesting that I've chosen a finger. I mean, it wouldn't work for me because my penis is a lot has a lot more girth. My penis would just become. I'd have to put it in flaccid. I'm not sure it would even go in flaccid. And then if something sexy happened on the other side, it'd be like an amazing cock ring. It'd be like a cock ring of time.
Time itself as a cock ring.
That erection would never go down.
Tempus fugit.
In the future or the past, people would think I was amazingly priapic.
Yes.
In the present, not so much. These are 46.
You could thrust it forward to a time when you didn't have to have unprotected sex anymore, and then you'd never have to wear a condom. That would be fantastic.
What?
Silence. I'm taking these off. They're steaming up.
It is. It's getting hot up here with all this talk. Well, I'll ask you this other emergency question, which I don't ask every week now. Simon Pegg from off Star Trek and other stuff. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Oh, have I? Well, I mean, you know, it depends what you mean by try, doesn't it? I think we've all had a go. Anyone with a cock's had a go.
Yeah.
Whether or not success was achieved is is our own stories.
Is that going to keep that to yourself?
No, never.
Never. It's good. It's because now he's in Hollywood and everything. He's not allowed to...
I got someone to suck my cock for me now.
Is it that little thing from Star Trek? Is that little...
He's just the right size. That's what he has. The whole backstory of Scotty and Keenza is the... Sorry, he's a little cocksock machine.
I should have known his name. But it's just that odd little thing.
That's actually Deep Roy, who is a venerable old short actor.
Yes.
Who you've seen in... the thing I guess people know him from recently was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah. He was every Oompa Loompa. He's an amazing character. He's been in the business so long and played so many weird little small things. But he's an absolutely lovely man, really, yeah. Really nice man. And very good at blowjobs.
Front page of the Sun. So you have, in fact, I think you're the only actor in the world, I may be wrong about this because I've got this off the internet, who has appeared in Star Trek, Doctor Who, and... an incarnation of Star Wars Clone Wars.
Oh, yes, yes.
I don't think any other actor has appeared.
I think maybe there's one. No. I think, like, maybe Noel Clarke or somebody has done something. I did a voice in... And I was an act of utmost hypocrisy because I was so vociferously opposed to the new Star Wars films. But when the chance to play Dengar, who was in a bounty hunter from The Empire Strikes Back... I'm just losing everybody now.
Honestly, well, not if it's my usual crowd. They're just in rap going, is he real or not? Is he... Scotty, it's him.
I had to jump at that, you know. Yeah. And I could feel like the sort of militant Star Wars fans going, you fucking asshole. But it was fun.
Were there any other 1970s, 1980s sci-fi things that you would like to be in? Sapphire and Steel?
Oh, well, that'd be great, wouldn't it, to bring that back?
Tomorrow People? Would you be in it?
They've just started doing that again in the States. Yeah, I noticed there was a show called The Tomorrow People, but I don't know if it's the same about the kind of psychic teenagers with the hand opening.
If they don't have jaunt, it's not...
Jaunt.
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 Jaunt. That's what they used to do, and then they used to press their belt, or I think they maybe had a wrist thing in some incarnations of it. Going a bit too far back for most of our young crowd here.
I remember the only one I remember starred Nicholas Lyndhurst, and it was about Hitler being an alien from the planet Treeborg. And they kept having a melting Hitler face on the screen, and his eyeball came out.
Yeah, that right rings a bell. The guy who was in it was in a band called Flintlock.
That's right.
See, now this is... I'm trying to get into... You know the comedian Peter Kay does the kind of nostalgia comedy that everyone recognises? I'm trying to get into nostalgia comedy that, like, one person gets. Tonight, you were that one person.
Yes.
But it's very exciting for you.
I just see how excited I was when you said Flintlock.
Flintlock. I was like, yeah, come on! I think Sapphire and Steel. I remember a great episode of Sapphire and Steel, which was a sci-fi thing with Joanna Lumley, and David McCallum, the
That's
Invisible
right.
Man,
yeah.
And he's in The Great Escape as well, which I'm a massive fan of. There was one episode there where I was thinking that's really stuck with me, where there was a sort of faceless man who would hide in all photographs.
That was terrifying.
And then he would turn around and be a faceless man. And at the end of it, they said, all you have to do, you'll be fine, all you have to do is never appear in any other photograph again in your life. Which, 1975, would probably have been doable.
Easy.
Yeah. But now...
Now it would be an issue.
It would be pretty difficult. You would never really be able to go
That
out.
Guy would be quids in now with all the fucking iPhones and shit. Yeah.
It was good. Well, so you're not going to do that. That's all right. And you're working with Tom Cruise... Mission Impossible.
Five now.
Yeah. You've done 3 to 5.
I did 3. Yeah, I was. Me and Edgar Wright were writing Hot Fuzz in our office one day, and I'd literally said in it. This sounds ridiculous, but I'd literally said in an interview when Shaun of the Dead sort of was doing well, and some journalist said, "Oh, what are you going to go off to Hollywood now? Like it's something that people do, you know, like cross a bridge and they never come back." And I very sort of adamantly said, "No, I'm not going to go off and do fucking I don't know Mission Impossible 3." Like I said it like it was a film I made up, you know, like where people make up video games and they're called Death Kill 7, and it's just like a really rubbish film. It didn't even exist. And then, like, 6 weeks later, J.J. Abrams called up. Because he'd just seen Shaun of the Dead, and he said, oh, I enjoyed the film. And he said, oh, let's see if that guy wants to work with me. And said, do you want to be in Mission Impossible 3? And I said, yeah!
And I said, oh, no, no.
Oh,
no.
I can't. I told the mirror that I wouldn't. Have you got anything else? But I no, and then the next thing I did like 3 or 4 days on it. That's all I did. But it was very strange to suddenly be. I had this massive speech on the first day, a great big long rambling exposition about some a weapon or something, and I couldn't fucking do it. And Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames came on set, and he was so patient with me. Because I just kept messing it up. Because I was like, I've won a competition to be in a film. And I was really trying to hold it together. And eventually I did it. And then the fourth one, you know, I was a little more used to things by then. Yeah. And then the fifth one we're going to make next year. And it's interesting. He's a very interesting character.
Yes. Your character or Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise. Okay. My character's meaningless.
Yes.
No, he's an extraordinary person. Everyone that meets him kind of just goes, ah. And a lot of people have an opinion on him, but everyone that's met him kind of likes him because he's very, I don't know, he's sort of built for what he does, which is to make movies and be a big star, and that seems to be his raison d'etre, and he does it very, very well. And he's very generous and extremely professional and lovely. And you kind of like, you meet him and you come away all like, So I every time, if ever he contacts me in any way, if ever I get a sort of, you know, a pigeon arrives with his little note on, I get very excited still.
Yeah. Well, is it sort of mind-blowing, or is it just, does it seem natural to you that you are now in Star Trek? And, you know, obviously when you were doing Space, it was all about paying homage to a lot of these genres. Is it mind-blowing, or has it just happened and it feels...
The thing is, because it happens over a very long... It's like if you jump into a very hot bath without lowering yourself and you'll scream your head off. But if you lower yourself in very gently, you'll just sort of go, ha, ha, ha. And I am at a state of, ha, 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 permanently. Just because it's very strange. But also you realise it's just a business and, you know, it demythologises itself as you enter into it. So... You know, once you're sort of part of it. I mean, being on the set of Star Trek is amazing because the sets are incredible, and we're very excited about what we're doing because it's Star Trek, and you know, no one ever loses sight of that. But it is also a job, and you just sort of get on with it. I threw up on the last one, really violently. I was twice actually. One was food poisoning, but one I had to do a scene in the film where I had to run across this long space hangar, and I have to sort of let Kirk and Benedict Cumberbatch in through this hole. I'm trained not to say that, but it can't. And
it'd be good if it was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, if it was just Benedict Cumberbatch. We got an actor coming in. And I had to sprint down. It was like a massive set in Playa in California where they built the spruce moose. You know the spruce goose. Was it moose or goose?
What is it called? Wikipedia nerd. Spruce goose.
Yes, they built that plane there, and it's a gigantic hangar. And they build sets there that are too big to go into film studios. So we built the hangar of this ship, the Vengeance, and I had to run down it. And I ran so fast, and I just wanted to impress JJ because he's that kind of guy. Because he's a very lovely man, but you just want to do your best for him all the time. I sprinted down, and I fucking ran so fast, and all the crew were clapping and stuff, and the little quad bike had to fight to keep up with me, and I like nailed it, and it was like everyone was going woo like this at the end, and then JJ went, man, that was great. You do it again, and I went, yeah. Is Timmy Two Mates and I'll do it again? And then, so I had a little break and I recovered. My heart rate went down to 189. And then I did it again. And by that time, I was just like that. And JJ said, can we just do one more? We're going to change the lens, come in a bit closer. And I'm like... So I did it again. And at the end of that take, I just went, I'm just going to go back to my trailer for a quick pee, and I'll be back in a minute. And I vomited so much, because I just had my lunch before. I didn't know we were doing that scene, and I'd eaten a whole plate of Metze. The catering in America is fantastic. And as a Brit over there, I just eat everything I can, because it might not happen again. So so I basically vommed up a lovely lunch.
I had a very similar experience on... It's almost identical on the set of Fist of Fun series 2 when Stuart did a sketch about the boy who cried wolf.
Yes.
And it was a routine he'd done for years, and it was about the boy who cried wolf, and then he was delighting and making everyone run up the hill to him and stuff. But yeah. I just played one of the villagers. I wasn't even a main role in it. And we'd been out filming, like, we'd done all the filming stuff in one place. We stayed in the hotel the night before, and I got really pissed.
Yeah.
I did do this all the time. And we had to run up and down this hill so many times. And even just the sketch with the retake. And then I wasn't even in the... I was just smelled like I was going to die.
You were chundering somewhere.
So that is as good as your story. It seems like I've seen a couple of interviews with the cast and you.
I'm taking this jacket off.
Sorry, I think you should. It's got a powerfully hot pit. This is how I get the suicide confessions out of people. Just make it. I don't know who I am anymore.
You melted Stephen Fry. That's what it was.
I melted him down. It seems like you have a good sort of camaraderie. You're playing practical jokes on each other on the set of.
Well, that wasn't that. I'm not really like a joke. You hear about this sometimes. You hear about the likes of, you know, Clooney and Brad Pitt all playing jokes on each other. I'm not a big practical joker. I don't like it when people get embarrassed. I can't watch any show where anyone gets embarrassed. Like, I can't watch any of the talent shows, or I can't even watch Strictly Come Dancing, because I just don't like seeing people get embarrassed in any way, and I don't like those practical joke shows. But we were filming at this nuclear facility in Northern California called NIF, which is the National Ignition Facility, where they are trying to create nuclear fusion by bombarding helium atoms with something, and every 7 hours, and they're trying to ignite a small sun, like in Spider-Man 2.
Okay. Sounds quite dangerous.
Yeah. But they will. When it happens, it will be a sustainable source of energy, which will, you know, completely make.
If it doesn't destroy the world.
If it doesn't destroy. If it doesn't suck us all into a warpy event, you know, dimension.
Yeah. If you get your finger in there.
Yeah. But. It would end dependency on fossil fuels forever. Right. It will change the whole geopolitical face of the Earth. And just in passing, I said to the guy who ran the place, Guy Bruno, this Belgian scientist, I said, when is this going to happen? And he said, about 6 months. I was like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? He said, yeah, about 6 months to 5 years. Absolutely convinced that he'll have nuclear fusion.
Yeah.
And I was doing a voiceover for BP during the Olympics, and they were doing all this talking about stuff about mining. In 30 years' time, we'll be able to find oil. And I said, you know, this is going to be fucking useless by the time you get there because of this fusion thing. But anyway, I said to Chris Pine, who plays Kirk in makeup, one day, have you put your neutron cream on? Because otherwise you'll get sunburn. And Chris was like, huh? And I said, well, if you don't wear this special cream, then you'll get like the ambient radiation in the air. It'll give you a little bit of a rash. You just got to put on this neutron cream. And then this became this. Once I let Chris on in that I was lying, and it wasn't. I was just lying for fun. And then we started to trick successive cast members with greater elaboracy, if there's such a word, until we had pots of neutron cream that the makeup department made. And Tommy Gormley, who's our first AD, would have the whole crew jumping up and down and shaking their hands to get rid of the ions in their in their fingers. And it became like this giant orchestrated practical joke till we finally got Benedict Cumberbatch, because he was sort of late coming up, so he walked into this, and we had him like doing all that. He kept doing this stuff between takes, and me and him and Chris were doing a scene one day, and it was him. He was being very, you know, doing his stuff like this, talking about getting to the airlock before the crew minimal crawl. All this dialogue he had to do, he kept fucking it up, and me and Chris were in a bit of a giggly mood. It was the end of the shoot, so he was getting really frustrated with himself. And then at lunchtime, he came up and he said, guys, I'm ever so sorry about the whole that thing that getting my lines wrong. It was that I had a bit of a headache. I think the ions were getting to me. Chris and I were just like, yeah, really? And then we eventually were like, how are we going to get out of this? What's our end game here? Because Benedict was so in deep with this. He was so convinced he was being poisoned that we didn't know how to free him in any kind of funny way. So we said, let's write a funny, like, disclaimer form. And we'll say, I, Benedict Cumberbatch, hereby accept the liability to put on neutron cream, which is a fictitious emollient, and I am an idiot for believing that it's true. So we gave him the form. He read it, signed it, and gave it back to me. So then we were fucked, because it was like, well, what do we do now? And eventually we had Benedict read out the form. So he said the thing, that, you know, the damning thing out loud, and it was a wonderful reveal. What? It just went out of control.
Yeah.
I'm not a practical joker, but that was fantastic.
The thing is, actors are all pretty stupid, though.
Aren't they?
Really?
But Benedict was so kind of, yeah, I'll sign it, whatever. what's the scene? And yeah, it was great. It was it's a very happy crew, and I hope it continues to be that way. We're going to make another one, I think, next year. And it's very nice to work. They're all very, all those kids are all good people, you know. They're not, there's not a Hollywood douchebag among them. They're all sort of very cool and grounded, and you know, you go over there thinking people are going to be weird and difficult, and I've not really come across anyone like that yet.
I think it works for, I've seen the first one, I was going to watch the second one.
Maybe one night, get on DVD.
Get on DVD, yeah. And, but it's kind of, it's a good way of reimagining it without without having to go back to you all having to be like William Shatner.
It's kind of cake and eat it, because I thought it was a very clever device, was to kind of like to reset it so that we can start from the beginning. But you have Leonard Nimoy is in it, so that says everything that you know and love about Star Trek, everything you saw in all those TV shows and films, it all happened, it's all safe, but we can start again now in a different timeline. So it's I thought it was a smart bit of writing.
Dangerous, though, when you get into timelines. I'm very I'm very obsessed about timelines making sense. Yeah. Have you watched Goodnight, Sweetheart?
One of the better time travel pieces.
I've actually, I've been joking about this for a long time, but I've actually had a meeting with one of the creators of Goodnight, Sweetheart about me writing a new version about a man from now who's obsessed with Goodnight, Sweetheart, who goes down that passage because he's so obsessed with it and ends up on the set of Goodnight, Sweetheart.
What an incredibly meta, brilliant idea.
So we'll see if that comes off.
I also thought that show promised that there were great things afoot. It was like there was so much to play with about him in the past and what his effects on it, but it never seemed to, they never took it.
It was quite hard to have the meeting because I couldn't go. The thing is, Goodnight, Sweetheart, shit. But he was very nice. I call it Gary Sparrow's paucity of ambition.
I think it.
I think that sums up the problem.
Friday night, BBC One.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
So this is something I want to ask you. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but your godfather to Chris Martin's daughter,
I am, yeah.
Apple.
Yes.
Was there no point in the christening where you just thought, maybe I should step... I don't know, they don't have, if anyone here has any objection to this.
It's hard when you name... It's, you know, when you name your kid, you have to kind of... You don't want them to be named by everyone else's name, but it has to mean something to you. And, you know, I think the thing was she was sweet and unique, and that was kind of the reason.
Also, there's loads of apples.
But she's never going to go... Let's face it, she's never going to be in a school where anyone goes, your name's Apple, because they've probably all got interesting names as well. So, you know.
Okay, that's fair enough. there was something very exciting I had to ask you about. That's that. Oh, this is might work because I think you might have done sort of. Have you ever? This is an emergency question. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
No.
My granddad rode through a man on his bike. Apparently, according... That's not slang in any way. I just rode through this guy the other night. It was amazing. No, he was apparently riding home on his bike one night, and a guy stepped out in front of the road and he just went straight through him.
Wow.
But I don't believe
anything.
I think
your granddad's just a murderer.
Oh, wait a minute. No, he hit a man. That was it. That was it. It said rode through on his insurance form.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe... I would love to see that. Just to get some fucking proof of anything. Because I have no belief in anything beyond what I know and what I know that can be proven and all that kind of stuff. I was at my daughter's Harvest Festival play the other week. And she started... It was a fly, wasn't it? Yeah. You got the thing?
I haven't got it. It's too small.
I got one, but my dog's
scared of
it.
By the time I've got it, I need it attached to the end of my arm.
Does it go...
Yeah, look at it.
Oh, it's good.
It's really... I would do it on you, but it really hurts.
No, that's her. I had one. I had one, but my dog got frightened of the noise of the flies exploding.
Right.
And I think it was because she could hear them screaming. Because they hear... they hear something more than we do.
That's true.
And it's just... No! That's what...
My children! My millions of fly children!
It was too disturbing. Anyway, I was at her Harvest Festival thing at her school, and they, you know, they it's not, it's a multi-faith school, and they would obviously they'd look at Diwali and Ramadan and Eid and all that kind of stuff. But it was a Harvest Festival, and at the end, everyone said a prayer. We all said a prayer, and I was kind of all the parents sort of put their heads down, and I was looking at, what the fuck is this? I was slightly, and then the other night, she said before we went to bed, she went, can we say a prayer? And I'm like, all right, fine. And because I wanted to have magic in her life, you know, it's not like I'm going to say, you know, Santa's doesn't exist. And so she can choose whatever she wants. So she said, and then she said, I don't want to pray to Jesus tonight. I want to pray to me. And then she said, and so we put our hands together and closed our eyes. She went, hooray for Jesus. No, hooray for me. Hooray for daddy. Hooray for mummy. I'm going to kick you in the face. Amen. Delightful.
New religion.
See, that's what you get when you have kids. You get that kind of stuff.
Don't tell Tom Cruise about that new religion. He'll love that.
Hey, listen.
He'll go crazy for that one.
That never came. In 7 months of working together, that I was all waiting for that to come up. Never did. I was.
He's biding his time. Don't you worry?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I find all that stuff intriguing. I don't know what the hell's going on there.
Yeah, it's made up.
Yeah, of course it is. So, but why?
I hope that explains it. So they could get loads of money off.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it is. But I'm sure Tom Cruise is very nice. You've done lots of comedy films, but you have done serious films. You played probably the most evil character in theatre in cinema history when you played Toby Young in. Whatever that rubbish film was called, the Secret
of My Success.
It was
Sidney Young.
It's Toby Young. Don't pretend it's not him.
No, it had to be Sidney because I couldn't play Toby because it just would.
Because if you started methoding,
I had to make him nice.
Home.
I had to make him likable. You know, he had to be sort of someone you could root for.
People don't know Toby Young is. Do you know who Toby Young is? Yeah, they do know. They just disdain him. Hopefully that is... It's a hot. I was in a boat race. I did an Oxford Cambridge boat race TV show.
Yeah.
Where we had to learn to row and go against each other, and Toby Young was one of the rowers in my boat.
Oh dear.
Kind of got. Jonathan Aitken was also one of the rowers in the boat, and I like Jonathan Aitken a lot more than Toby Young.
Yeah. Toby Young just doesn't. He has a thing where he doesn't care. He has no desire to be liked. I think.
No.
He doesn't. It bothers me if someone. If I do something to upset someone, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. What did I do? Not because. I don't think it's a weakness, it's just that I like, you know, friendship and unity, and I'm a bit of a hippie in that respect because it's nice to be, everything's nice when it's nice. Fuck, I'm bland. But with Toby, it's like, he just doesn't fucking care.
No.
And it's kind of weird, you know.
We were training for the marathon at the same time, me and Emma Kennedy, who was in that as well, and we went for a jog up the thing, because we were doing lots of rowing, so we didn't really, but we just thought, oh, we should do a bit of a run. He said, oh, can I come with you? I said, yeah. And because I was a bit faster than Emma, near the end I said, oh, I'll just go a bit faster and go ahead. And Emma said, fine. And then Toby Young started sprinting like you in that tunnel. He started sprinting like it was a race. So he caught up with me and then sprinted on. And I was just going, well, I'm not going to race you. It's not a race.
I just believe
what
that,
a
yeah.
dick. I was watching American Werewolf in London the weekend again,
yes.
Which was one of my favourite films when I was a teenager. And
me too. It was one of my the first horror films I ever saw.
Yeah. Do you like the bit
with the nurse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. That's what I just wanted to say. If you remember. But it's amazing. I think you've got like teenage crushes that you've talked about, but it's amazing to see something. It's still very vivid when you see someone. If I could, if my finger could travel back in time, I can tell you where it would go to.
To Jenny Agutter's.
It would go to the pool in Logan's Run when she's swimming around in there. She wouldn't even notice. It'd just be like a little ripple.
If it was your finger.
Yeah.
Yes. It would only...
We've explained.
Was she I had a work with John Landis on something, and he had Jenny Agutter came and did a little cameo in it. And it's strange when you meet someone who, and I'm sure she must get it all the time, but who represents, you know, your sort of early masturbatory
you've
fantasy.
You've wanked an awful lot. Until I was trying the tape goes cloudy.
Who
it
was you had
videos.
A wank over.
It used to be videos, and I had the video off the TV of American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
And there was two bits. How wonderful that you can go back, because you can't really go back and use. As an older man, pornography loses its lustre quite quickly. Yeah.
But let's say, I bet I was the same. Let's say them together. The first one was the
shower.
And the second was the decapitation.
No? It was Lindsay Drew in See You Next Wednesday.
Ah, of course.
Hello? No, there's no one of that name here. Who is the mother of the oldest child in Outnumbered?
Isn't his dad...
Yep. His dad is also a porn star, bend over.
Yeah.
And his mum is Lindsay Drew. You know, that's you meet people at work, don't you? And, you know, if you're spunking over their tits, sometimes you go...
It's a classic office romance.
I was bend over, which is something I wish I had the courage to do this. Bend over was on before. You know who bend over is? Just pretend you don't know. That lady isn't there. She doesn't know. I don't. He's just a kind of sleazy porn actor.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen. It's weird. I don't really like British porn.
It just feels like a bit too close to home. Yeah. it could be happening next door, and that's weird.
In a British accent, but it's all more, like they're almost like comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, so look at her. She's nice and cheap. It's like that. Hello, love. Hello. We're just making a film. Would you want to take part? Oh, yes, please.
It is that. He did an hour-long Edinburgh show about his life.
Did he?
Bend over, yeah. And was on in the same theatre as me just before I was on doing whatever show that was that year. And one of the pieces of merchandise he sells after his show is a dildo of his own erection.
Oh, God.
Which, you know, I'd be interested to see how those would sell if I offered those.
Yeah, I know. You should do one of your own.
And talking of that, actually, there is a website which I talked to Dara about the other week called Dirty Britcom Confessions. Have you seen this?
I have not.
In which people go on and reveal their sexual fantasies about British comedians.
Is that right?
And I mean, everyone's on there. Stoofer's on there. Everyone's on there. your ones are mainly based on you and Nick Frost, which a lot of double act ones are. But this,
yeah.
I just want to see how you feel about this. This is someone's fantasy. I went out with a guy once because he looked like Nick Frost, and he let me pretend to be Simon Pegg in various roles.
Really?
Does that make you happy to think that that's
happy? Happy is a word. I feel. Dirty in a way. How strange. And wonderful. And wonderful. Absolutely. I
don't know.
That.
It could be a man or it could be a woman. We don't know. It could be a woman pretending to be Simon Pegg.
I ship that.
It could be a man. It could
you know,
be
that's
a...
internet parlance for supporting a fictitious relationship.
Okay.
I've just learnt that. There's a lot of Freeman and Cumberbatch stuff on the web at the moment, which is really disturbing. Lots of pictures of Benedict like biting Martin's ear, blood dribbling onto the pillow. And, I don't look for it. It's just...
It is odd to see about your friends and yourself. This is another one. I so badly want to fuck Simon Pegg on that beanbag in Spaced. Then we can play Resident Evil.
After?
Yeah. I think that's the wrong way. I think...
It's a great post-coital game. Listen.
I think play it first, just in case. It just doesn't go as well as you think, and then you're stuck there on the beanbag, a bit sticky. Resident Evil. Do you think there's any chance that you will have sex with that man or woman who wants to have sex with you on a bean? Do you still have the beanbag?
No. Oh. Or any sex drive. After hearing that story. No, sadly. No. I'm happily married.
In your dreams.
Even in my dreams.
Isn't that annoying? To not.
I got a blowjob in my dream last night.
Yeah, exactly. That's
but,
my
but
problem.
But from someone I didn't even know. Yeah. I think it was that guy.
There aren't very interesting ones about me. The one that best one about me is I'd quite like to get high and with and fuck Richard Herring. It would be really intense. It wouldn't. A, because we got high and I'd just be probably fall asleep. And I don't really do that and it would be confused. I'd be like in the Norman Wisdom on Acid sketch. I'd go, why? There are peas coming out of my face. I don't think it would be intense. I think it would be awkward and embarrassing. If you're listening, that person, thanks for the... But your teenage crushes, actually, because we were talking about Jenny Agutter, Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
Alien.
That was incredible for, at a young age to... Because in a very sort of divisive way, you look back at it now, she strips down to a very scanty outfit for a young boy.
Yeah.
I don't know, my voice is getting really deep talking about it. and then we worked with her as well, and she was everything that we hoped she'd be. She was so lovely and she came over and did a bunch of press for us and stuff. And on the first night when we were filming, we were in New Mexico, and it was her first night on set, and she just was sat like over there, and we were all the young people were sat here, and we could see her sitting on her own. And me and Nick went, we should go and say something to her, right? So we walked over and went, all right, Sigourney, you want to come and hang out with us? Maybe, have a cup of coffee and stuff. And she was like, yeah, all right. She was like just as kind of nervous and cagey as we were. Yeah. And then came over and was an absolute delight. And she's, fabulous. So really charismatic. And I always think the true sort of indication of someone as a person is just often their professionalism when it comes to something that, she's a fucking Sigourney Weaver, but she just gave it everything and she totally bought into it. And we had her say, we had Blythe Danner, who was in the film, she says, get away from her, you bitch, to Sigourney Weaver, which is Sigourney, her line from Aliens. And we had Sigourney give Blythe the line reading of the line. And like Nick and I were just coming everywhere. It was like, it was ridiculous. It was such a nerdgasm moment. She's, I've got a huge love for her.
And I asked Nick Frost when he was on what he thought your worst film you'd ever been in was. And he refused to answer, which I thought was very sweet, because there's loads to choose from.
Yeah.
What do you think your worst one that you've been in is?
It's difficult to... the trouble... I always gauge these things in terms of the experience of making them. What ends up being judged is... it's something different. It's the product that gets judged. And, for me, it's like the process always, and I'm very... I haven't done a film which I've not enjoyed. It's difficult for me to... I did a film called Free Jimmy, mm-hmm. which was a Norwegian animation about an elephant with a certain poundage of heroin sewn into his anus. This is true. And it was a really odd... I'd done the translation. I translated it, not from Norwegian. It had been translated into English. Yeah. And I translated it into Norwegian English, into English English, and tried to wring some comedy out of it. But it was a bizarre, dark Scandinavian story. There were Latvian people getting their heads blown up. And the elephant was addicted to speed. It didn't work in the final analysis. And so, with all the greatest respect to Chris Nelson, who wrote it, and I would probably say Free Jimmy.
Okay. I'll check that one out. See if it beats Run, Fat Boy, Run.
So, come on. Run, Fat Boy, Run, right? When it's on Channel 4, you keep it on because it's a sweet film. And it's like, it's about a guy and he's got to get Tandy Newton back.
When it's on Channel 5.
It's not, it's on 4. I have no films on... Yes, I do. But...
I'm only jealous because I tried to write something almost the same as that.
So, oh, did you?
Yeah. So I'm annoyed.
Sorry.
I just wasn't sure I was going to... I have mentioned it in another podcast, so I thought I'd better... You've done loads of really good films.
I'm very proud of Run, Fat Boy, Run. I'll have you know.
I know. Jim Fee, it's good. It's got Hank Azaria in it. It's good.
I know. Let that pause play out.
But I very much enjoyed The World's End, which I saw recently, and I saw I'm very excited because Edgar let me see the first half of it before he was even out.
Oh, cool!
But then that was annoying because then I didn't know what happened next. It just got to the good bit. They were going to kill all the end. But you don't drink anymore.
I don't. No.
So you're going out drinking, like, you used to drink a bit.
I used to drink, yeah, a lot. Yeah. And then I decided it was time to not drink anymore. And that was 3 years ago, so...
How easy did you find it to give up drinking?
Pretty easy. Not in a way that was like, yeah, just... I felt like it was something I had to do, just because it was... I turned 40. I was basically a midlife crisis, I think. I'd had my daughter, and I didn't feel like that tallied with the other. And I wanted to be able to wake up in the morning and be sprightly and play and not be a sort of kind of dad. And I quit. And also that happened at the time when I started to get ready for Mission Impossible 4. So I had to kind of get in shape. So alcohol was the first thing to go. And I was amazed at how that helped me get fit and lose weight, you know, because, you know, that's what I had to do at that time. Otherwise, I'd lose my job. So, and it just kind of went on, and I enjoy not drinking now. I can drive into town, and the only thing about not drinking, the only downside about not drinking, is that about 10, if you go out with your friends, about 10 o'clock, every single one of them becomes a complete cunt. And you just think, why is this happening? And it's because you were also a complete cunt when you were drinking, yeah. You just didn't notice. But everybody, even my wife, will become like this bizarre cackling stranger who I don't really like. And so that is the only downside. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, it's a gift to not
Although
drink.
That must be useful in terms of acting drunk. If you're sober and watching people drunk, you actually know how people act. Because no one really knows how they act when they're actually drunk themselves.
Exactly,
unless
you
film yourself drunk and then try to recreate that.
There was a great show. Have you heard of it? The Worcester Group, which is the American sort of performance art collective that Willem Dafoe was part of, and they did a show called LSD, Just the High Points, and they basically dropped acid, filmed themselves tripping, and then did a show where they just acted what they saw, you know. Yeah. There's no end to that story. I just thought that as a good idea.
You should try it with booze now, especially if you haven't had a drink for 3 years.
I'd be fucked.
Fucking amazing. What a brilliant end to the podcast that would be. Let's bring some booze in. And you grow your own veg. You've gone all health conscious, and you grow your own vegetables.
No, we just got a garden, and the garden had a little vegetable patch, and we'd moved in there a few years ago and hadn't done anything with it. And then this year we decided we planted a bunch of stuff, and they grew. it was a cabbage, and some carrots, and there was suddenly a pepper. And that was amazing.
Well,
that
is kind of amazing.
And then you eat them, and they don't, you don't die, and it's like, well, I did that myself. But we want someone to help out, you know, because we're not very good at horticulture, and growing vegetables is a particularly specific thing, you know. It's something that you have to really know about. And so a friend of ours has a friend who's an expert, and we want her to come and do our vegetable garden, but it happens to be Kim Wilde, which seemed to be like the most amazing thing. If Kim Wilde does our vegetable garden, it'll just be so cool. I'll have to sing Kids in America quietly while she's digging up my tomatoes.
Did you lose a tree today in the storm?
I did.
Wow.
A venerable old willow. I woke up and looked out the window, and it's giant, great big willow tree was on its, like, torn out of the ground. And it was a terrible sight.
Ooh. Can you pop it back in again?
It's not, no, it's already been sawn up and put into piles. It was pretty scary. Because it was the violence of it. All its innards were like red.
Right.
Like where it snapped over, and the insides of the tree were red like blood.
Saying he was bleeding.
Yeah, it looked like
so that Roald Dahl story where was the same thing where the guy can hear.
I think the dog heard it scream as well.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, but you know, it's fire, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Can you burn it?
It'll keep the old wood stove going for the long winter nights. I'm painting a very bucolic picture. I live in Crouch End.
Let me see what other emergency questions I've got. I'm really hoping this one will come good right now. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No, but I was convinced at Cub Camp in 1983 that we discovered a wood beast living in the Forest of Dean.
Right.
Because we found what we thought was a footprint. And me and the rest of the Cubs convinced ourselves that we'd discovered a British Bigfoot living in the West Country. It turned out to be untrue.
No. Are you sure?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It might be real.
Was it very big, the foot, or was it just medium size?
It was about the size of
a child's sandal.
It was the size of our Kayla's foot, basically. but we were so immersed in this kind of role play that we discovered this. We called it the Wood Beast. that we all got really scared. But no, I've never seen a Bigfoot.
No, that's a shame. It would be brilliant if you had.
Has anyone ever said yes?
No, not yet. But, you know, it's a slow burner. And when it comes good, it's going to explode. And oh, yeah, I did, actually. I forgot. I did. And talking of the West Country, you went to Bristol University.
I did.
But what do you think is best, Wookiee Hole or Cheddar Caves?
Well, I actually, when we were making Hot Fuzz, I lived in Wookiee Hole.
Actually in the cave?
Yeah.
Like a witch?
Yeah. I lived in Wookiee.
Yeah.
Near the hole.
Yeah.
Near the...
Did you just say, can I live in Wookiee so that it'd be like Star Wars? Is that why you... Yeah.
I wanted to live in a Wookiee's hole. That's a different fantasy. Because I had to, every day we were shooting in Wells, and it was like 2 miles to Wells, and so I was able to run to work every day, because I was trying to keep healthy then as well.
Yeah.
I like Wookiee. I've got a soft spot for Wookiee. Why, are you a big Cheddar man?
Cheddar, I'm just Cheddar's the where it's at, man.
But does Cheddar have all the kind of lights and a witch and shit?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, so that's why.
It doesn't need that.
Were scenes from Doctor Who filmed at Cheddar?
No, it doesn't need any of that stuff.
Eat that, Cheddar.
I think Day of the Triffids was filmed in Cheddar Gulch. Would you eat Wookiee Hole cheddar cheese? I think that's a guess.
I'd give it a go.
I actually did eat it on my pasta today. I'm a terrible. It was delicious. Like Wookiee Hole is much better than cheddar cakes.
Did you feel bad as you ate it because you were betraying your roots?
I felt terribly bad. I've got Frost Wright written down there, and it's like Frost Nixon. But I don't know why I put that. Oh, I thought of a good sitcom for you if you ever come back to the UK.
Off the peg.
No, it's better than that.
Go on.
Square Peg in a Round Hole.
Okay.
In which you play a nerdy man. It won't be much of a stretch.
It's a bit of a stretch, yeah.
Who works in a manhole.
We should talk about this.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I'm really good at pitching. I'm not really can't be bothered to write stuff. That's my.
Could I go back in time in the show?
It would cross over with my other work. Maybe all of my sitcoms should just have
converge.
A bit where they can go back to Goodnight Sweetheart, however serious it is. It's like Narnia. They
That'd
will find
amazing.
Their different way in.
You could just pick like different episodes of Goodnight Sweetheart to crash and be in. And then when you watch Goodnight Sweetheart back, you pick certain extras that you are in. You know what I mean? So it looks like it's a retroactive.
No, it's exciting. It's a very exciting project I'm not going to do. you didn't go to McDonald's until you were 23 years old.
No, I went to McDonald's for the first time on June the 19th, 1983.
Right.
And I had a treble thick milkshake from the one at the top of Tottenham Court Road. And the reason I know that is because I was in London to see Return of the Jedi. And I remember the date of the Return of the Jedi. And as such, for that reason, remember the date of my first McDonald's treble thick milkshake. And it was like an amazingly exotic thing. And little did I know, it was like, you know, the petrol and strawberries.
But I was the same because I didn't go to McDonald's. My mum and dad would never let me go to McDonald's.
Oh, really?
We grew up in Cheddar, so there wasn't a McDonald's in Cheddar.
Same.
There was one in Bristol. But they just kind of cleverly almost made me not realise we were there. Until I was about 16, I didn't realise these things even existed. Then I became vegetarian when I was 18, so I had about 2 years of eating McDonald's. But it's kind of weird to think that there was a time when you could escape. You're trying to stop your kids eating fast food or your child eating fast food.
I'm trying to stop her watching The Phantom Menace for as long as I can. It's difficult, though, because you start off and you've got this little blank canvas who's never eaten anything bad and, you know, everything's organic, and then eventually you start going, oh, it's ice cream, just eat that. But you want to encourage them to eat.
But the danger is, my parents wouldn't let me, you know, would very rarely let me eat sweets, and they would very rarely let me do that stuff. And then I would just dream of the day. I was like Charlie Bucket, dreaming of the day that I would get like a bar of chocolate to myself. You know, we'd allowed to eat chocolate, but we had to share it between my brother and my sister. Oh. And just the idea of having a bar of chocolate to myself just seemed impossible. My ambitions were to have a whole bar of chocolate myself and to have the blonde one from ABBA appear in my bedroom in just her pants.
Wow.
I still wanted her pants.
Holding a bar of chocolate would be perfect.
But that meant when I could had the means to buy myself a bar of chocolate or the blonde one from ABBA, I did so with gusto.
Yeah.
And ate, look, and that's what happened. So be careful, that's what I'm saying. and you spend a lot of time imagining, and I mean, I don't want to talk about zombies very much because there's, you know,
it's been done, isn't it?
But you, because what I do, I spend a lot of my time, you imagine zombie attacks and how you would escape from them in real life. I spend a lot of my time imagining terrorist atrocities.
Which are more likely, to be fair.
And I'm in my imagination, I'm really brave. I'm kind of hoping I'll be in one, just to test whether
I'm
brave.
Is it like somebody stands up about to detonate their waistcoat of death?
Yeah.
You jump on them or something.
Yeah, I sort of work out where... I'm in the Westfield, and especially now that's become even more terrifying. But I was terrified beforehand of going to the Westfield. I'm working out where they would be, and then working out where in Starbucks I could run up the stairs... And then when they came, I know where I can hide around the corner, so when they come up the stairs, I can hit them. And then I would get their machine gun, if that's what they were doing.
Clearly would.
And then I'd go and get the other ones with that, and then everyone would go, yeah!
What do you think
but
you'd really
my
do?
My worry is that the police would see me with the machine gun and assume I was one of the terrorists. Take me out.
Death by cop.
And then everyone would go, oh, but no, he saved everyone, and he was good.
Complex fantasy.
That's what I imagine. So if that ever comes up, see what I actually do.
Well, I was on an airplane. I think my wife and I were on our way to honeymoon, I think, and it was a flight to Mauritius, and a man fell out of the toilet. Like, the door suddenly flew open and he just fell out, like he fainted or something. And we thought something was going to happen. We were like, this is it! But nothing happened. But I literally, all I did was sit up slightly and feel like I was going to do a poo. That was it. No bravery at all.
Yeah. No, I think I'd be the same. I'm sure I would be very unbrave. It's nice in my imagination. A man fell on me when I was on the plane to Armenia. So I talked about it in the last podcast, though. So spool back to that if you want to hear my story. Is there anything about the TV series Space that you have never said before? If so, say it now.
Probably not, to be honest. Other than that, there will never be any more, despite we constantly get asked about it. I'm sorry, but there just won't.
I did not ask that question.
I know.
I did not want you answering that question.
The reason not because it just didn't happen when it should have happened. There was a window when we could have done it, and it just didn't happen. And then because of what happened with Shaun of the Dead, it took us off in a different direction. And coming back to Space, and I'm sad about that, because I think we had another series in us. It wasn't a two series show. It was like there was another series, and there was Tim and Daisy, the two main characters, would have eventually, there would have been a huge romantic coming together for those two, and it would have ended cheesy and happy, and you know that was all to come, but it never did. But there we go.
Maybe in an episode of Square Peg in a Round Hole. Go into the sewer underneath that house.
That's it.
Yeah.
This is the way to solve all my problems.
I mean, you're unlikely to come back and do a UK sitcom, aren't you? At any point in your life now?
I don't know. I mean, never say never. I mean, the thing is with TV now is that TV's changing. TV's almost won the war with film in a way, because it's, you know, theatrical cinema is on the ropes, really. And it's doing everything it can to not be, you know, 3D and fucking IMAX and capes and spaceships and stuff, but the fact is that with our homes becoming like cinemas, we can have TVs that look like cinema screens. People are getting more inclined to stay in and not go out. It's a shame, because you lose the communal experience. The whole point of films in the cinema isn't really seeing them on a big screen, it's seeing them together with people you don't know, and you know, sharing something. That's quite beautiful, but that's kind of, I hope it doesn't die, but it's dying.
But what's interesting, and I do think your films, the blockbusters you're in, are different to this, but it's becoming too cliched and too obvious, and you're not getting anything. And then something like Breaking Bad is an amazing, deep thing that you can engage with the characters.
And it goes on for hours and hours. Yeah.
So that TV actually offers more scope as a writer, as an actor, and as a viewer, I think.
It's becoming the place where a lot of serious acting is happening. And I just did a pilot in the US for a show called Mob City, which is like a sort of it's all set in the Mickey Cohen era of like 47 in LA, when the LAPD was struggling with there was all this immorality and amorality going on. And it's directed by Frank Darabont, who did The Shawshank Redemption, and it's got some amazing people in it, and it's a very attractive place for actors to go now. And I feel like it's no longer film's sort of poorer cousin. But you know, I don't know. I kind of just want to... The hardest thing about my job is that I have to be away so much.
Yeah.
I literally... We worked it out the other day. We sat down and worked it out. This year, I did 127,903 air miles.
Christ.
And that's not... I don't mean on my card. I mean, that was the physical amount of time.
Yeah.
5 continents and 10 countries and 26 cities. And that's between 2 films and 2 press tours. And that all sounds very fun and kind of like, isn't that cool? But I didn't see my daughter for three or four weeks. And it fucking hurts, you know. You're away for... It's very, very difficult. And it hits you like an ice headache every now and again. You just go, oh, God, I don't like this. And I was trying to figure out a way to have my cake and eat it and do the job which I love and I can do to a certain degree, but not have to ever leave home. And I don't know what the answer for that is, you know.
No, but I guess it gets... You know, you've got so much power. You're doing things that presume you're getting paid quite well for. I'm guessing you don't. No. I just get free Star Trek figures.
I get to keep my uniform. That's it.
But you know, I think that is the danger. I mean, I work a lot too hard, but I don't have any children, so it's fine because they're sex excrement. But you know, you actually, I think you sometimes you have to step back and maybe go, well. It's really hard because, you know, I think as an actor it's really hard because you're aware that it can just go. Can't it?
Yeah. So. And the difficulty is that you get the chance to work with people that, you know, like, I could perhaps stay at home and try and get something going here and, it, you know, and earn money and live. Yeah. But then the chance to work with certain people that you really want to work with is very difficult to, you know, it's a battle between your own... ambition and kind of whatever and your personal life is a strange, and I'm not complaining in any way because I'm having a lot of fun, but it is a weird one. It's a weird little dilemma, you know.
Yeah. And so if they offer you a part in Star Wars, the new lot they're making, what do you do? You go,
fuck yeah, shooting in London. It's shooting in Pinewood.
Oh, cool.
In fact, you know, the great thing is at the moment is a lot of films are shooting here in the UK because we're offering very good tax breaks for film companies. So, you know, the new Avengers is shooting here, Star Wars is shooting here, Mission Impossible is going to shoot here, Star Trek 3 is going to shoot here, I think, possibly. So that's kind of worked out quite nicely. So I don't have.
Well, if you do square peg in a round hole, we can just dig the round hole in your garden. Where the tree was.
Yes, problem solved.
Just come in. Look, it's been fantastic. I haven't seen you for ages. It's been really lovely to see you again.
Too.
And thanks so much for coming on and doing this.
Thank you, trying
to get you on for a little while, and it's great to have you, ladies and gentlemen. Simon Pegg, ladies and gentlemen. How'd you like them sky potatoes?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.